So Thor Ragnarok, the newest addition to the MCU. And so with that sort of...
I just want to point out, and I think this is endearing, so don't, this isn't a critique, but I love whenever you go into like the things we're supposed to say because we're in a podcast mode, your voice just totally deflates. Have you noticed this?
No.
You'll just be like, you'll be like talking, and then you're like, oh, we need to say XYZ thing. And you'll be like, all right, and so, I mean, make sure you do, you know, this thing. And we're going to, we'll talk to you, I guess, next time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right. On today's episode, we both went and saw a movie, and we are going to be reviewing, what was it? Guardians of the Galaxy 3, right? No, I'm sorry. It's my mistake. That wasn't intentional at all. It was Thor Ragnarok. That's what we went and saw.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Which, before we get into the movie, I just want to say, okay, so when we started this podcast, I remember having some sort of episode where we had discussed that, like, that sometimes we'll, like, see movies separate and stuff like that. And then I remember saying, like, I don't really have a problem with it because there's been some times where I have by myself. But I'm going to say, like, my mood has kind of started to change on that.
Oh, yeah?
I had a, I had a bad experience this go around.
Seeing it alone?
Yeah, not with the movie, but the experience.
Okay. Do tell.
Well, it was kind of a bunch of stuff, and not all of it strictly has to be with because I was alone. But if you recall, we were actually trying to see it at the same theater because you have the movie pass thing. It ended up not working out because where I normally go is kind of far out for you.
Right.
And you have to be with movie pass, you have to be in the location to do it, and you have to reserve seats at this theater. So it's kind of difficult coordinating it. Although I will say, there was only two seats at the edge, and I got one of them reserved, and so no one was going to take it. So that seat was open, and you could have.
I mean, so to be totally honest, the whole situation there was, it was a really, that day was daylight savings time day, right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
And so my memory of this is we were planning on going to see it. We were going to see it up by you. And because of the movie pass, in combination with the distance, in combination with the fact that that theater requires reserved seating, meant that there was a somewhat decent amount of like organizing that had to be done to make sure that we could, you know, sit next to each other. And that day was daylight savings. But I don't know if you know this, but human beings don't naturally observe daylight savings.
Right.
It's actually just a thing that we as a society have decided to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so little tiny human beings, also known as children.
Yeah.
They decide, you know what? I don't think I'm going to just sleep in for an extra hour. So they go ahead and get up an hour early anyway, or their normal time, which is an hour early in the new time. And little tiny humans are also very sensitive to getting off of schedules.
Right.
And so that day was a very rough day. And so I was just, there was a point when I was like, you know what? This isn't worth attempting to do. I don't want to have to be thinking about, like, you know, trying to get up there early enough and also reserving a seat. And I was like, you know what? I'll just see if I can go see it with somebody here. And then if nobody can, I'll just see it on my own.
Yeah. So it didn't work out for the two of us to go see it, but I ended up going to see it. So I sat down in my seat, which was like next to the little wall. So I got one all the way far off the wall, and I was like somewhere in the middle of the theater, if that makes sense.
Middle as far as backwards.
Yeah. Front to back. And so I sat down in my seat. I mean, first of all, like, they did a horrible job cleaning, and so we weren't even allowed in until like literally 2 minutes before the movie was scheduled to start.
Oh, wow.
So it was sort of like,
you missed all of the like advertisement-y things that they do now? Oh, that's
no,
sad.
It's not that. It's the fact that you reserve a seat so that you can go in and sit there at your own leisure, and you end up waiting and standing anyway is sort of annoying. But that didn't have anything to do with being alone. But what did happen is, and I should have said no to this, but I was being polite at the time and I wasn't thinking it through. This couple came up to me and they go, "Hey, if you don't want to, it's not a big deal, but I noticed like you are, is anybody else coming? Or I mean, do you have someone sitting next to you?" And I was like, "No, I don't. Why?
Are you all alone?"
Yeah. And they said, "Well, because we have separate seats because we got tickets at the last second, and one of our seats is right there. If you don't mind switching us, could we sit next to each other?" And I said, "Yeah, sure, that's fine." So I go up there and I sit and I realize like I'm in between two people, and it was enough to be like uncomfortable. I didn't like the people that I was sitting around, mainly because there was a strong smell of honey mustard, which was really bothering me.
I mean, strong smell, if you stop there, it's bad. But then the word mustard involved in that definitely takes it to another level.
Yeah. It was one of those things when you think about it, it's like it's a normal thing, but you didn't order chicken tenders and honey mustard. So it's sort of like a jarring smell because you weren't expecting it.
Yeah, that is an unpleasant. That's just movie theaters.
Yeah.
As a principle, should not sell foods with strong, potentially unpleasant smells.
Yeah.
Like popcorn, totally fine with that, right?
Yeah.
But like, don't do like hot wings or anything with mustard in it.
Right.
Or, you know, a strong, smelly, you know, cheese. Probably should just avoid that, right? Also, garlic.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
Yeah, no Italian foods.
No Italian. Sure. No chili, you know?
Right. So I ended up watching the movie, and even during the preview, of course, the Star Wars ad campaign is always trying to get me to break my rule. And that came on, and I had forgotten my headphones, so I looked like a proper moron, just with my moving my fingers around in my ear and closing my eyes.
Did you
sing? The fact that I couldn't like hide next to a wall where I was sort of that was also made it uncomfortable.
Well, if you'll recall, in our I think it was the War for the Planet of the Apes episode, that was my very first time seeing a movie all alone in the theater.
Yeah,
and they played the Star Wars trailer, and I like jumped out of the chair, stumbling because, of course, it was the reclining chair, and made a proper fool of myself. But this time, I was prepared. I had my headphones literally with a song ready. I had it sitting on my neck so I could just pop it right in.
I mean, I still haven't seen or heard any lines that stick in my mind, nothing relevant.
Yeah,
of course,
here.
You just, at some point, you hear a muffled, like, John Williams score, even though it's probably someone else redoing it, but that's about it.
So that trailer that they showed at Thor,
mm-hmm.
I didn't see a frame from it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, something about the initial chord, and part of it is you're sitting there kind of, every time a trailer is about to pop up, you're sort of ready for it, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, it was like instant, I knew that it was Star Wars, which is pretty special, don't you think?
To me, it was a lot of stress because the movement of my seat and the smell kind of blindsided me. So I actually wasn't thinking about it. And all of a sudden I heard the notes and saw like a frame for a split second that I'm not even sure if I remember what it was. And I immediately like just went into blackout mode. So,
Yeah, I still have the mental picture of the hand slapping the rock from that very first teaser where I like made a fool of myself running out of the theater. That's the only thing that I've seen.
I don't know who or what I saw. It could have been any character in any costume. I just remember something. It was like a frame with someone standing in a window. Like, that's all. And then
spoilers, Dan.
Yeah, spoilers. Now I know when I go into that movie, at some point there is a window and a person. It's going to ruin the whole movie. And watch the movie end up being like, There's nothing. It's all outside until the very end.
You're like, wait a second. I know it's going to happen here. No, but so to your thing about giving people seats, though, I know maybe you regret it because you were slightly less comfortable. But that right there is a part of the reserve seating that kind of bugs me.
Yeah.
Is that you get these sort of unnatural seating arrangements where in a normal theater situation, nobody would have a second thought to you being like, "Hey, do you mind scooting over?" And somebody would just do it. But because it's like, no, this is, you know, G6 is my seat. I'm not just going to give that up.
Yeah.
You get these weird situations where people could very easily restructure themselves to make another, you know, couple happy or whatever. But instead, they just kind of have to separate. So good on you, you know?
Well, the reserve seating I still think is a net positive, but I will say it has its drawbacks, which some of you've pointed out, but I think you even mentioned that day. Like, it seems that there should be something where it's like, hold these spots for 30 minutes. Like, something like that.
Yes, that's exactly...
Because I've noticed even when everybody is on board, so, like, there was one time last year where I think we were coordinating, like, 6 people to go see the new Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Or no, this was when Episode 7 came out, so 2 years ago. Because it was, like, a big deal, and so, like, a bunch of us were going, and there was, like, 6 people, I remember. And I remember, like, everyone was on board saying, okay, good, this time. And it's like, we all, especially it being, like, the first week that it opened and having to coordinate to where we all, like, within the same 5-minute period, hurried up and got the seats that were open. Like, even that was annoying, even though everyone was on board at the same time,
right.
If that makes sense.
And, like, there's a couple people that I see movies with that almost always... they're kind of like, yeah, I'll probably make it, but I might not be able to. And it's not that big of a deal for me to hold like one seat for them. And then, you know, if they text me and say, hey, I'm not going to make it, then I just don't save that seat for them. But like with the reserve seats, it's a big pain because it feels like you have to have everything nailed down ahead of time.
Yeah, like there should be an option. Well, because the other thing is reserve seats, 9 times out of 10, people are buying these online. That's the whole point. Or at least that's the convenience of
right,
it.
Right.
And so it doesn't make sense that you almost have to feel obligated to go in early to get them anyway. It is kind of nice if you know, hey, let's swing by, get them, go eat and come back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's nice. But really, that kind of defeats
the... I don't even know what the process is if you buy it at the box office.
You just go in and buy it.
I mean, do they like swing a monitor around and ask you which one you want?
Well, they don't swing it around. It's already sitting in front of you. And they just say, these are your open seats. They're color-coded. So it's actually not too bad. But yeah, there should be something where it, like, it says, you know, like, if you know you're going with separate parties, you're not paying all at once, it should allow you to, like, reserve these seats. How many tickets are you paying for? And, like, you pay for your 2, and then there's still 4 seats open, and there's, like, an entry code for those seats of your order, and you just give it to the other people, and they can sign in and pay for them. Like, something like that would be great. And, of course, if they're not paid for, like, let's say 30 minutes before showtime, like, you just have that sort of restriction. It's like, pay for these 30 minutes before showtime, or we don't offer the section reservations 30 minutes before showtime. Like, something like that is not that crazy.
Yeah, it's complicated because you don't want people, like, parking spots and then not using them.
Right.
But I know some of them have it where you can split the payment itself somehow.
Yeah.
But I feel like another thing you could have is like you reserve a section and then, it's probably such a niche thing though. People wanting to pay at the box office.
Then the payment split thing should work. Then they should have an option to payment split and have a 10-minute window, because a lot of times it does this thing where it's like, you have 2 minutes and 50 seconds to buy this. Hurry up. And you got to get through all the stupid screens.
Yeah, but a 10-minute window doesn't solve the problem of somebody wanting to buy it in cash. You know what I'm saying? Not online.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. Maybe it's just a like not common enough situation.
There's a solution to it somehow that can make it available, but I don't know.
Right. The question is that too niche of a problem?
Right. Yeah, it may not be worth it to them, but I also feel like kind of the point of reserve seating is so you can do it online and not have to worry about it. And I guess, I don't know, I guess most people are just only getting 2 tickets most of the time, but...
Right. I'll say for me and my wife, it's amazing.
Yeah.
To just be able to reserve it and then not think about it, not have to get there early, that whole thing. It's a problem, or not problem, but it's an annoyance whenever it's a group of people, or like, not even a big group, but just, you know, I'll text somebody, hey, you want to go see a movie, and we just meet there. But you can't kind of have that same impromptu-ness if you have to pick out your seats, make sure they buy the same seats next to you, and get that all figured out ahead of time. A lot of times when I'm organizing these things, it's way more impromptu than that.
Yeah. Yeah. When The Dark Knight came out, I remember that was, you know, we didn't have reserved seating around here, and we even got our tickets way ahead of time, and we did the midnight showing of like the first release.
Oh yeah, I remember
that.
Were
you with us?
I was.
You were. Yeah. Yeah, and a friend of mine from high school was coming, and I remember she arrived like right when the movie was starting and didn't think it would be that big of a deal, or was just running late or something. And I remember like that being like a crazy thing, because especially with a big movie like that, like we were worried, like even though I was waiting out in the lobby for her to show up, like making sure that all of our seats stay hidden, because someone could come and say, no, just move over.
Right.
And they have every right to do that if you're in a packed movie house. And
that was,
yeah,
that was a really cool experience.
Yes, it was.
That was one of my favorite. I mean, part of it too for me, I don't know if you remember this, but I had a family member who was sick, and so I was spending a lot of time at the hospital, and you pretty much totally organized that from my perspective. I don't know if you were organizing everybody else's.
Yeah.
But it was this really nice sort of reprieve from hospital-y things.
Yeah.
And we just showed up and like it was just packed with people. There's lots of people dressed up. This was like right before they started doing the like pre-midnight releases, where honestly it's a lot more convenient now, but it takes a little bit of sort of the energy out of it whenever they make sure they have enough tickets for everybody. You know, they show it a whole bunch of times. With this one, it was like they only had one theater for it, and then they ended up opening another one, but they weren't going to open the other one until they knew they sold enough tickets.
Right.
And so it was this sort of kind of craziness, and workers are sort of running around. You can tell they're sort of freaked out at organizing everything.
Yeah, it was an event, and it
was a lot of,
you're right, like with the reserving thing is nicer, but it is kind of cool to say like we were kind of on the tail end of that, at least for our area. And and also it was like a you know, a landmark movie,
right,
like, as far as
it's crazy too, because Batman Begins was a really good movie, right?
Yeah.
But like,
I feel like that was like a sleeper hit. Like, it started kind of like, oh, it's this new Batman movie, and if you like Batman, and then people quickly realized, like, this is like something, it's something better than the normal superhero fare. And that was, because I remember I didn't like DC or Batman at the time. Like, that was even before I was reading comic books. That was a long time ago. And I remember, if you remember our youth pastor, like he was big into Batman and he saw it. And I remember him reassuring me. He's like, oh, you should go see the new Batman while it's out. And we were like, oh, okay.
I feel like that's why I saw it. Yeah. Same kind of thing.
Yeah. Cause like last thing I remembered, cause especially having at that time, not being a big Batman fan, was the last thing I remembered was the Batman and Robin with Mr. Freeze, Schwarzenegger. And so like kind of a hammy movie that I remember liking as a little kid, but kind of stupid now.
Right.
And so that was my memory of Batman. And to me, it was just like, oh, they're making another Batman movie, of course, because they made Spider-Man and X-Men. I think it kind of slowly built in popularity and people realized what it was. But sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying it's crazy that like The Dark Knight was genuinely amazing. Right. And it's relatively universally understood to be amazing. But Batman Begins was just really good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But somehow, I guess it's just an incredible success from a marketing standpoint. That movie was as hyped as I can remember a movie.
Yeah.
From at least that era of our lives.
I think people immediately noticed who Christopher Nolan was once that was coming out. Like, he had Batman Begins and then Prestige.
Yeah, The Prestige.
Had come out. And, like, people were like, holy cow, like, he's got this. And I think just with even those two movies that people were aware of, they were like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to see this then.
Right.
And the fact that it was the Joker and it looked crazy. Like, I remember when I first saw the first trailer with that version of the Joker and I was like, this is something crazy I've never seen before, and in a good way. And I want to go see whatever that is that's going on.
That trailer is like, I know a lot of people use The Phantom Menace as that example of one of those early web trailers, but I don't really remember that.
Oh, yeah.
My main memory of getting into trailers was the Dark Knight trailer.
Yep.
And I had it on like everything that I owned that could play a video. Like, I didn't have like a fancy, you know, iPod video.
Yeah.
But I did have a Nintendo DS. And I had this little cartridge that was basically a USB drive that you could load like custom software on. So I had this like There is a Linux kernel that you could run on this Nintendo DS cartridge that let you play videos and play. Mm-hmm. It had a couple media files and maybe like ROM stuff or something. I don't remember. But I just remember like showing off to all my friends at school this, like, look, we can watch the Dark Knight trailer on my DS. This is so much cooler than your iPod video.
Yeah, and
I probably watched that over 100 times, easy.
I think the whole like mystery surrounding it, even before the trailer came up, kind of led up to the hype, because I remember originally like Heath Ledger was cast, and people were like, "That guy from The Patriot," and like,
is that what you thought of as Heath Ledger? Because Heath Ledger is A Knight's Tale to me.
Yeah, that's
unquestionably. That's even now, despite the Joker, Heath Ledger is The Knight's Tale.
Yeah, so I remember that was sort of a thing. People were like, I don't know about that as the Joker. And then they started releasing those like promotional posters before the trailer. And I remember it was like, you know, the fogged, like, why so serious thing written in like blood, it looked like. And there was like those things where people were like, you can kind of see what he looks like. And then there was like some shots of on set where you could kind of see him from afar, but they were really blurry. So there was like this whole like, they created a mystery that wasn't there before, like, just what does he look like as the Joker?
Oh, I don't remember that.
And then when that trailer came out, I remember, like, talking to people about it and being like, holy cow, like, that doesn't even look like Heath Ledger. At least maybe that wasn't widespread, but I feel like I thought it was, just because, like, that's what I went through with a couple of friends. We were, like, trying to figure out, like, what does he look like? Because there was really nothing released until the trailer. And then you could actually like see his face and costume.
I remember the I Believe in Harvey Dent stuff just being everywhere.
Yeah, that too.
Gosh, what a good movie.
Yeah. But that's for another time. Yeah. So we saw a movie.
I feel
speaking of good superhero movies.
I feel like this is going to sum up my feelings of Thor Ragnarok a little bit.
What's that?
It's a great movie that was genuinely fun, that prompts you to think about even better movies and then forget about that one. Like, I really genuinely liked this movie. So, and I feel like I'm going to, while we're talking about this, I'm going to start sounding like I'm downplaying it, and there are going to be nitpicky things that are really only nitpicks because I'm comparing it to other good movies, namely the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. But if I were to have watched this in a bubble, I probably would have thought it was amazing. Not even just amazing, but like groundbreaking.
See, that's the thing. So before we get into all the amazing stuff about the movie, I wanted to start with, I made that joke at the beginning about like it's Guardians 3. And I wanted to say that because, like, one thing that did kind of make me roll my eyes, while it's not a criticism of the movie itself at all, is that there was a lot of, this is like a standard setter. This is like a new, unique thing. And I got that vibe reading a lot of critic reviews, particularly, and just people raving about the movie. And I will say this, while it is certainly on par with things like Guardians, like the first Guardians, and it's definitely one of the MCU's better films that they've made, probably one of the best, it did not feel original to me. And we've talked about in our podcast the whole idea of novelty, so it's not really a big deal. So that's
right.
So I do want to go back to that, but I just want to say, like, one thing that I found irritating about the commentary, and not the movie itself, but the commentary around it, is people acting like this is now like the gold standard. And I was just thinking the whole time, like, this is a spiritual successor to what the Guardians movies started. Like, this was perfecting that formula.
Yeah, in a similar way to the Avengers being a sort of standing on the shoulder of Iron Man. It's not that Avengers isn't good. It's that it's building on this really good sort of idea and platform.
They built on what worked and went with that. And
I honestly think that one of the problems is Guardians did this really unique thing with the sort of 80s vibe and the music from the 80s in a sci-fi setting. And it's been attempted so many times that it almost has a similar effect in my brain to found footage.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, I almost remove the benefit of the doubt because you see found footage and you go, oh, well, that's just like, that's been played out. But it's like, even if the thing does it well,
mm-hmm.
it almost has to overcome all of these movies before it that have sort of like messed up that idea.
Yeah.
And I feel like in this movie, whenever the sort of, you know, 80s song would come on, you almost roll, like your brain almost just starts to roll your eyes and go, ah, they're doing, trying to do Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it was actually pretty effective, it was like, I don't know, something weird in my brain, it would like take me out.
Yeah, I get that. Now, I do want to say, like, the very few negative criticism that I did see of the movie, though, typically was along the lines, and one particular review comes to mind where some people thought that the jokiness in the Marvel Universe has kind of culminated in this movie to where you can't take it seriously at all, and the entire thing is a caricature and a punchline. And I will say, like, I don't think that was the case. Like, I feel like it still lived within its world. It just decided to loosen up and have fun, because Thor always kind of had fun, but it didn't quite hit its tone right. It kept trying to take itself... It kept trying to do bizarre, crazy stuff, but also take itself a little seriously.
Right.
And that was, and it's not to say you can't take it seriously, because there was some more serious moments in this movie too. But it's just like before it, I don't think they realized that they were dealing with such silly concepts and that they could really lay into that and just have fun. And this movie, and there were glimpses of that in the previous ones, but the story, a good story on top of it as well, made this one the best of the three, I think.
Yeah.
Because the first one sort of had a, we need to do this as a precursor to Avengers sort of thing. And then the second one was not necessarily bad, but it was just sort of forgettable. And I remember something about red stuff, like shifting around and
I have
some dark
basically
elves.
Basically zero memory of the second one.
There was some funny stuff in the second one, and it was fun to watch. But it was one of those I got done, and it's like, well, I don't necessarily ever need to see that again. It wasn't bad, but it didn't really, like, leave an impression.
Right.
And this one was the first one that really, like, I'll buy it on DVD, probably. I don't buy all the Marvel movies. I only buy the ones that stand out to me. And, like, that's one I might...
I would like to watch it again.
So we saw Thor Ragnarok, and with that criticism out of the way, which really wasn't much of a criticism, it was a great movie. So you've not really been a big fan of the Thor movies in the past. I've been a little more warm towards them because I like fantasy, but I know you didn't like them. So
I wouldn't say like actively disliked them. I would say the first one I thought, okay, this is fine. He's like the character I'm the least interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Probably just the setting, you know, or whatever. I mean, I like sci-fi, and I used to like fantasy more, but yeah, like, I feel like I'm not as into that anymore whenever I can't understand the rules.
Right.
And it kind of lives in that world. But being in the Marvel universe, it has the humor that makes it fun anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't take itself too seriously.
Feel like there, not that it was as easy to figure out as far as rules go, but I feel like this is one of the first Marvel movies I've seen in a while where defeating the villain actually had some logic to it.
Yes.
Where
you're like, I want to get to that at some point.
Cool. Okay. We'll get to that then. I did want to start before we go through the plot and say, like, one of the things that I like that this director did, which apparently he's like known for being very funny and people like him.
Yeah, this is Taika Waititi. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah. What do you think about how he handled a lot of like fan criticism / questions just head on in the movie? And like what I mean by that is a couple things come to mind. One,
do you want me to take a guess as to what you might be saying?
Well, there's two things. The first is Jane. So, Natalie, what's her name?
Portman. Natalie Portman.
Yeah, in real life.
Queen Amidala.
She's a bit too sophisticated, I guess, for the Marvel Universe, and apparently has kind of been trying to get out of this. I guess her contract's up. I don't think she was trying to get out of it. She just doesn't care to go on.
Sure.
And so they sort of deal with that with just going, hey, where's Jane? Oh, we broke up. It was mutual. Like, just a stupid throwaway joke. And then What do you think the next thing is that they dealt with?
Well, so in response to that one, I didn't know that was even dealing with something because, yes, to be honest with you, I just assumed something happened in the second movie that I couldn't remember.
In the second movie, she's on Asgard with him. was my remembrance. She goes to live with him. It was like a...
That's pretty funny. Like I said, I have absolutely no memory of like how the plot played out in that movie. So.
Right. It reminds me of Avengers 2, like Joss Whedon put in a line while they're at that party at the beginning at like Stark Tower. Like Maria Hill is like, gentlemen, where are the ladies? And like they all have an excuse or something like that. Like they bring attention to the fact that they know they're not there for some reason.
I know they did that with Peppermint Potts, right?
Yeah.
There was always drama with her contract or something, and they would kind of bring that up.
Did you just add a suffix to her name? Is her full name Peppermint? I don't remember that.
I have no idea. What is her name?
I just know they call her Pepper Potts. I don't know if they call her Peppermint. Yeah, I don't remember.
You're laughing like it's so silly that Pepper versus Peppermint. Be.
Yeah, it could be.
No, it is Pepper Potts.
Okay. All right. But anyways.
Forgive me.
Yeah. So that was something that they dealt with it just as a throwaway joke, which I thought was funny, was where Natalie Portman is.
Right, right.
So what do you think the other thing is that I'm going to mention?
So is this in relation to the crystal things? What are they?
The Infinity Gauntlet.
The Infinity Stones?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've told a couple different people about that. Being one of my favorite lines at the beginning was when he's just like talking to the skeleton and he's just like, yeah, so I've been searching the galaxy for these Infinity Stones.
That wasn't what I was talking about, but yeah.
You know what I'm talking about though?
Yes, I do.
He's just like, I've been searching the galaxy for these Infinity Stones. I didn't find any. And then they just move on and it's like, great. That's all you needed to do. Perfect.
Yeah.
No, what are you? So you're talking about a different thing?
Yeah. Okay. So when Hela, the goddess of death, or whatever, like, comes in and takes over...
Asgard.
Yeah, Asgard. Holy cow. Okay. Anyways, when she comes and takes over Asgard, there's a scene where she's going through the chambers where all the weapons are.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and there's the Infinity Gauntlet, and she knocks it over and just goes, fake. And, like, that was something that's been going on for, like, 3-4 years, something like that, where, like... There was a, like, I think it was a after credits scene where, like, they showed, no, I remember what it is. So originally in the first Thor movie, they had that Infinity Gauntlet there. And people always point out, like, hey, in the treasure chamber place, there's, like, an Infinity Gauntlet. And then people were confused because later on, there's, like, an after credits sequence where Thanos grabs an Infinity Gauntlet of his own that's clearly not in Asgard and says, sometimes you got to take care of things yourself or something like that. So there's always been this like...
It's like this continuity problem. I didn't even know about that.
Well, it's not because the way people resolved it is people were actually like debating like, why is there two Infinity Gauntlets? People didn't reject that there are two. They're immediately discussing why are there two.
Gotcha.
And so it's been this like online nerd debate.
I was totally unaware of this.
Yeah. And so like I've heard podcasts talk about it and stuff like that. And just in a one single second, they just go fake.
That's pretty awesome. That's really awesome.
Yeah, so there are like lots of things like that that were all throughout the movie that they just kind of handled like fan continuity problems or questions, and they just dealt with them just with a joke.
I feel like that kind of stuff is great. I mean, maybe that's what it's like if you can watch something and they're doing a bunch of fan servicey stuff, but you have no idea they're doing it. And it doesn't feel like, oh, I'm missing something. Like, that line was funny on its own, right?
Yeah.
From my perspective. But then it's, like, really good writing to be able to do that where you're kind of giving these, like, ultra fans a sort of in-joke.
Right.
But you're also not writing it in a way where it feels unnatural. And, like, somebody yes. like me just, like, goes with it and it doesn't feel weird.
And sometimes if the joke is good enough, it's okay because it's totally worth the punchline. So, like, I'll give you another example. Okay, this is very, very minor spoiler for Game of Thrones season 7, but it's not something anybody would really care about, including yourself. But I just wanted to give that tag there just in case. But there's a character like early in Game of Thrones that's very minor, that his storyline is left off at the end of one season where he's like off rowing in a boat. And so he never came back for like 3 years of the show's running. And people were always joking around like, hey, where's so-and-so? I guess he's off, like, he's still rowing. Like, he's just out there on the water rowing a boat for 3 years. And then in the newest season, they went into the main kingdom to get him for like to help with a mission. And whenever one of the characters shows up and finds him, he goes, how did you find me? And he's like, I knew you would be here. And he's like, where else do you think you would be? Still rowing? And like, they made that joke because like the showrunners knew
of the giant sort of joke that's built around this.
Yeah, it was a meme in real life.
That's
like
funny.
People would post a picture of him like in a boat and just say he's still rowing.
That's especially funny in a show that takes itself very seriously.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it worked.
Yeah,
and,
that's
like,
great.
Almost everyone I've heard like thought it was hilarious. And that's what this kind of reminded me of. Like, it was a real like thing that people were theorizing about with the Infinity Gauntlet, which arguably is a big story that they're leading up to with like the new Avengers movie.
Right.
And it was just funny that they just sort of were like, nah, that's not real. So let's start then going through the plot.
Do you wanna walk us through? Do you remember well?
Ooh, I was hoping you would do that. But,
all right. Yeah, I can give it a shot here.
Okay.
If I can remember. So the very opening was him kind of doing that, like, so I bet you're wondering how I ended up here.
Yeah.
Did that feel really weird at first to you?
No. I expect it because I'd seen the trailer, so.
Well, I guess I remember seeing that in the trailer, but I didn't really think that was how the movie would be.
Oh, yeah.
But the reveal that he was talking to the little skull thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That made it great. At first I was like, are they really doing a, like, monologue thing? And then it was like, oh no, he's actually talking.
It's very Emperor's New Groove opening.
I don't remember the opening to that.
That's exactly how the movie opens, is David Spade narrating, like, so I guess you're wondering how I got into this situation.
I liked it though. I liked that whole scene with the super serious demon dragon thing, and
yeah,
or not dragon, but the flaming skull thing, and he clearly setting us up for like, this is going to be a way more jokey version of Thor than what we've had before.
Right, right. Which is the best way to go, because even as the actor, like, I feel like Chris Hemsworth is a lot funnier than he is taken seriously in that role.
I agree. I thought he was hilarious this whole movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So after that, what does he do? He jumps into Asgard with the giant dragon thing.
Yeah, well, the crown from the... I forget the god's name or whatever it is that's supposed to bring Ragnarok. Because there's pieces of this that are real Norse mythology. But whatever it is, he takes like the crown from that thing so that it temporarily cannot do Ragnarok and grow as big as a mountain and destroy Asgard.
Right, right. Which seems like a good thing to bring to Asgard.
Right, right.
But but it worked out. So yeah. So he gets there. And what do we have? We have everything seems like it's totally bizarro world, right?
Yeah.
I was really confused at this part of the movie.
Okay, so the end of the second movie ended with kind of one of the dangling threads was it's like a happy ending at the end of the second movie, and Odin is talking, and then I forget how they do it. It might be like a mystique eye sort of thing, but there was some sort of like signal that was Loki pretending to be Odin, and it was like this thread that was left hanging there, so people go like, "What? I wonder what they're going to do next." And so Loki is Odin. And that's what was left over that they were
dealing with. And I got that, obviously, eventually. But it was definitely weird.
Yeah.
And it felt a little weird, too. Like,
what was the weirdest part? Was it Matt Damon's face that showed up that made it weird?
Our theater burst out laughing whenever we saw his face.
Okay, I immediately started laughing because I was like... Okay, mine didn't. There were some people sort of chuckling, but like it wasn't as big of a reaction until like people noticed that that's who that was. And so, like, it was funny because, like, I thought it was him. And then I started, like, second guess. I was like, wait a second. Is that? Because it, like, kept, like, going away from his face or whatever. I was like, yeah, that's him.
I may have done that if the entire audience hadn't just, like, totally bust out laughing.
Yeah.
Because then that was confirmation. It was so random.
Yeah. Apparently, some people knew he had, like, because he was listed in the credits. I had no idea. I definitely didn't. At all.
It was a very interstellar moment.
Yeah. Yeah, where he just shows up.
Yeah, which also made me laugh, which was not the tone that movie necessarily needed, but it was like,
right.
Wait, Matt Damon's in this?
Yeah, he worked a lot better in Thor Ragnarok than he did in Interstellar. Which is a statement I never said, I never thought I would say.
But no, my problem with the whole Asgard thing was, it kind of made the whole city seem just completely dumb. You know what I mean?
No.
Like,
I'm not disagreeing. I just don't know what you
mean. So, like, it felt like Odin was not at all acting like Odin. Everything was very, like, childish almost.
Yeah.
And then everybody's just sort of, like, going with it and clapping along. And, like, I don't know. It had a very, like, look at how stupid all the people here are. They're falling for this, like, thinly veiled thing.
Yeah, with like Eomir running the gate too.
Yeah, although that one, yeah, I mean, that was funny, and that one made a little more sense. It's like, okay, they had to replace him with somebody who's not as good, but it's more just like the everybody's like good with the giant statues of Loki and them doing plays that are like,
right,
honoring Loki specifically. Like, I don't know, it was just sort of a weird thing.
Yeah, I get that.
But it's a funny movie, so it wasn't like a big deal.
Right.
It was just sort of odd.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm trying to think of what happens next. So he gets there, basically calls out Loki for like, knows that it's him.
And then,
I forget
so
what
then they
off.
Decide they want to go find Odin, right?
Yeah.
Which, did Loki kick him out? How did he end up stuck in Norway?
No, that wasn't explained. Like, I think this was sort of like a change of direction from what they originally had planned. It's just like they had to deal with it because the second movie left off with Odin gone.
Gotcha.
And they didn't really explain it. So I think this was just a quick, like, setting the record back straight again.
Either way, we end up with Loki and Thor on Earth in blue jeans walking around New York City, which is kind of weird.
Yeah. After a cameo from Doctor Strange, which was a nice tie-in to that movie.
Yeah, that I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I did too.
I mean, I like Benedict Cumberbatch, and those scenes were really funny. The scenes where his beard just kept filling up and they kept sort of appearing in different places. I thought that worked really well.
And he calls his hammer back through the whole house.
Yeah.
I like that they address logistical issues with the hammer like that.
That was pretty awesome. But,
yeah, so they meet Odin, and Odin's like basically, hey, I'm leaving the plot now, so that there's
now this exact moment that you showed up is when I'm going to die.
And guess what? You guys have an evil sister that I never told you about,
right?
Who's the goddess of death, named Hela, and it's Galadriel from Lord of the Rings, which I thought was, I don't know, she's just like, it was great. It was like, I'm not saying it's criticism, but it was like, she's just such a high caliber actor.
Yeah.
And I guess Anthony Hopkins is too.
I was
too.
About to say, I think these movies are sort of classic examples of like really big budgets draw really, really like high caliber actors to do sort of silly roles.
It was just surprising seeing Cate Blanchett playing the role that she did, which was like, it reminded me a lot of like seeing Tom Cruise in that like that rock star musical. It was just, which she was dressed very much that way as well. Like, looked like she could have fit into like an Alice Cooper video or something. And it was just, it was great.
So talking about her character a little bit, sort of jumping the gun. Did she seem like she was just full CG a lot?
Oh, I don't think so.
Like, there was a lot of scenes where it was like just her walking. And I was like,
when it,
she looks like she's just CG in this scene. I don't really understand it.
No, I think that's just her. The only stuff that was CGI, I think, was obviously like the slick back her hair into huge antlers thing. But other than that, I think that was just her. Like,
I mean, I'm not talking like close up shots. I'm just saying like there was a lot of like I guess, sort of action scenes, but they aren't, like, fighting. They're just, like, you know, her running or something. A scene that would normally not be CG. And maybe it was just the costume made it look that way. But I kept... It was something that seemed to happen enough that I wrote it in my notes. Like, this is weird. It seems like she's just CG a lot. Like, did she, like, break her leg on set? And so they just had to... But then you'd think they'd use a stunt double.
I didn't notice it, but I don't know. Maybe I'll notice it again once I watch it.
So her character was the most disappointing to me.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Right.
Like, I actually liked seeing her in the movie. It was a lot of fun as a villain. But yeah, it didn't really matter. She was just sort of like, this is the plot device that needs to be here.
I thought
to get
she
them to
was
do other
good
stuff.
When she wasn't fighting.
Yeah.
Like, I liked the concept. I liked that she was the third, or the daughter of Odin, right? The older sister of Thor. And I really liked the theme of, like, Odin actually has a dark past. Like, how do you think we got control?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we might seem benevolent now, but she represents the sort of hiding of your dark past.
Yeah.
And they played with that a little bit, but the movie's way too jokey to kind of dig into that. But I would love to see that in... That's the type of theme that I would love to see in, like, a DC movie where they're trying to be all dark and brooding. It's like, we'll do something interesting with that.
Yeah, and they can. They've just been having a little problem in the writer's room.
But like, I really like that idea. Because it's something that, as, you know, an American hits home, right? Where it's like, we have a dark past, and like, how do you reconcile the empire you've built with the sort of bad things that you had to do to get there?
Right, right. And like, dealing with finding out your father was a genocidal god.
Right.
Essentially, that seems to be what he was, and now you see him as this...
And like...
It's that...
Which, I guess that's another sort of criticism, is they didn't really deal with that. Like, Thor was never upset at Odin for being a warmonger.
Well, yeah, and they also do that with Loki a bit as well, because, like... Now, to be fair, they address it kind of as a joke later on. Like, they're like, didn't... Last time I saw him, wasn't he, like, killing a bunch of people? And it's like, yeah, it did... Or no, they ask him, like, what side he's on. They're like, it depends on the day. Like, some sort of comment.
But
like
that's
that.
Sort of his character, right?
Yeah.
And, like, he does pay for that. Like, he, I feel like, is almost hurt by the fact that he has to keep backstabbing his brother a little bit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but I will say, like, go back to Avengers. Like, he was just straight murdering people.
Right.
Like, and I think they even make a comment in Avengers, like, he had killed 80 people or something like that.
But they don't paint him out to be good.
Right.
Whereas Odin, they never, like, give us the time to sort of reconcile that he, like, he doesn't feel like he ever has to ask for forgiveness or admit that he's done terrible things.
That's true. I'm just saying, like, Loki, though, is in a similar situation in that, like, the only reason they soften him is because people like that character and think he's funny and like Tom Hiddleston or whatever his name is. But really, if you think about it, if this were a serious movie, that would be quite egregious to just overlook the things that he did. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, I mean, because they're, you're looking at it the perspective of these are gods, aliens, and all this crazy stuff is going on, but it's like, on a human scale, he murdered a bunch of people. Like, that's, he literally committed a massacre.
I guess I'm just saying, from a characterization point of view, like, Loki is a dark character with problems, and that's recognized, whereas Odin is true. And they really interestingly explored that through Hela, but Thor still had his little gladiator moments where he would, like, you know, before dying, he's going through the field and then he talks to Odin, and it's still like Odin is this great, you know, father figure who gives him advice.
Yeah,
and it's like, didn't we just establish that you're actually, like, you have a sort of evil past? Like, shouldn't we be dealing with that?
He didn't, but I think to be fair, for the narrative sake, I don't think Thor knew that until the end of the movie.
I guess that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking of him having. Wasn't that at the very end whenever?
I don't know. There might have been. I remember there was some stuff before then throughout the movie, but maybe that's why they didn't make it a main thread from, like, a narrative perspective, because there really would have only been about 10 minutes to deal with it. And that would have been, like, starting a whole new thing.
I guess I should recognize at this stage that the fact that we're critiquing on a level that we're critiquing at for a movie that treats itself this way is kind of like a sign of how, like, well thought through this movie was.
Yeah.
Because it really was, like, it's a stupid movie, but kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy, actually. It's like somebody put an actual significant amount of thought and care into it, it feels like.
Yes.
Despite it completely treating itself as a joke.
Right.
Underneath that, there's, like, really interesting characters and thoughts going into it.
Right.
And I think that that's what helps sell the jokes.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So if we move on from, you know, their little reveal of Hela, what she just, like, instantly destroys the hammer, right?
Yeah, she pretty much, and then they go back to Asgard, and I think, yeah, so they're trying, they're getting taken back up to Asgard through Eomir, I forget his name, Carl Urban, and, you know, I know him from Lord of the Rings and Star Trek, Dr. Bones. So he's since he's the one opening, like, the Rainbow Bridge thing, like, he's bringing them back up. They're fighting Hela, like, in the Rainbow Stream, and they both get thrown out of it and hurled into space. And so Hela goes to Asgard, pretty much takes it over, and Eomir kind of is his assistant.
Patsy.
But is clearly has a moral struggle, which will pay off later on. And so they have that thread going through it, but she takes over Asgard for the time being while Thor gets hurled into another place entirely. So that's where a lot of the next big chunk of plot happens, if I remember correctly.
So what did you think of that world? What was it called again? The trash world?
I don't know. I just call it Jeff Goldblum's planet.
Jeff, that is the most appropriate name. What did you think of Jeff Goldblum's planet?
Well, I thought it was, I really liked it. It had, like, that whole, like, lived-in feeling. It very much matched, I read Planet Hulk, which there was some threads that they clearly used in this movie. And for people that don't know, that was a very big Hulk storyline where he gets hurled off into space, gets captured on this planet, becomes a gladiator, starts a revolution with a bunch of people, and it actually has a very, like, serious tone, and it feels a lot like a John Carter type storyline, but just kind of replace it with the Hulk. But in this, they used elements of that, and they made this planet with, like, a gamekeeper and everything, and there was a lot of elements of that that were similar, not exact.
Okay.
But, so yeah, to me, it sort of brought to life pieces of, or maybe pastiche is the right word, from this comic book that a lot of people really like.
I just really liked that it was a garbage heap, but unlike any other film representation of garbage, it was just intensely colorful.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, it had a very unique style to me, which maybe that comes from the comics.
But, and they even make fun of it too. Like, there was like a point where someone says, like, something about the color patterns on the wall. They're like, pick a color. Is it white or is it red?
in Thor's, like, bachelor pad.
Yeah.
Or not Thor, Hulk's bachelor pad.
Yeah, with the color scheme, like, what a lot of the design reminded me of, which it wasn't complete. So, you know, a little bit because you started watching the documentary, but, like, the Jodorowsky artwork that he worked with, that guy, it reminded me a lot of this, like, European French art style, as far as, like the tiger stripes, like, all swirled around.
I mean, it definitely had, like, a almost 70s. Just psychedelic.
It wasn't trying to be Star Wars style ships. It was trying to be like, hey, this is a sci-fi crazy thing that just has all these bold colors and stripes and patterns and stuff.
Yeah,
and,
like, I really liked that's what I liked like. The whole art style of that planet. I just thought was so cool.
Yeah.
Across the board. And Jeff Goldblum being the sort of epitome of that.
The weird, creepy, charming gamekeeper. I don't even know.
Like, his,
like, there was
his,
that this, moment.
His you know, classic villain, I'm going to kill somebody to show how evil I am moment was so funny, where he, like, melts him and then he accidentally steps in it. And
then he just makes really weird, like, facial expressions at one point at Thor, and Thor just, like, furrows his eyebrows and looks at Loki and is like, what?
It really does. It really does feel like they just started the camera and then just said, hey, Goldblum, just do your thing. And everybody else just react to him.
Right.
And, oh, gosh, it's so funny.
Yeah. It was great. I don't know if you know this, like, in universe, small little thing, like, the gamekeeper that Jeff Goldblum is playing, I believe that his costume is supposed to be similar to the collector from Guardians.
I think
it's because they're supposed to be in like a similar league or something. I don't know if that was supposed to be. Like, I remember reading something about that, but I don't know if that's officially what it was supposed to be, because they definitely didn't really make a connection in the movie, but that's what it felt like.
I definitely got that vibe from the trailers. I remember initially thinking it was the Collector and then realizing it was Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, so Thor is on this planet with Jeff Goldblum, where he's like a gamekeeper that basically, I guess, has a monopoly on like a large...
Somehow he Jeff Goldblumed himself up to the top and set up a competition of sorts.
Yeah. So Thor wakes up in a garbage heap and gets captured by a drunk Tessa Thompson, who we find out is a Valkyrie. That is, I guess she feels disgraced and depressed.
I liked her character.
Yeah. I like her as an actress. She was in...
What else was she in?
Well, I know her from Westworld.
Oh, okay.
And she's been in some other various things. She's like kind of an up-and-coming name that a lot of people are hiring for her for stuff. And I liked her because, like, in Westworld, she was, I won't say a bad guy, but she was more of like a snarky character.
Yeah, don't give me any spoilers on Westworld.
No. And I just remember, like, as a character, like, she was fine as a character on Westworld, but I didn't like her. Like, and that was what she was supposed to be. And so, like, seeing her as a likable character in this movie was, like, kind of a nice change of pace.
Yeah.
And I really
When
I
she
really
first
liked it.
Showed up, I thought she was going to be the sort of stereotypical, like, oh, it's a girl. And then, oh, look, she can still fight. And, like, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then when she when she passed out or, like, fell off of the stairs.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, they're doing something interesting with her.
Yeah.
And, like... She was, like, you know, super, like, she felt like there was something underneath where you felt like she could do something awesome, but
right.
I don't know. She just embodied, like, a character that felt very real.
Yes.
And funny at the same time. I liked her throughout the whole movie.
And obviously, you come to find out that she's a Valkyrie, and she was, like, I guess one of the last ones that was alive when they originally tried to stop Hela way back when. So that's sort of her motivation to come with our characters later.
Right.
But that's kind of her role. But at the moment, she's working for Jeff Goldblum on this planet where they have these huge gladiatorial fights to the death. So Thor gets taken before Jeff Goldblum, finds out Loki has been there for a longer time than him, and they just sort of pass over it by saying that time works different here.
Yeah.
Which was funny. And Loki is kind of in good graces with the gamekeeper, and he's not gonna help him immediately. And then Thor meets Doug in a dungeon.
Doug?
Yeah, Doug, the rock person.
Well, Doug was the one who died.
Oh, okay. What's his name?
Because he called Thor next Doug.
Oh, that's right.
I can't remember
okay.
what his name is. Let's see.
That's annoying.
I got IMDb up.
Let's look this up. Yeah.
It is... Korg.
That may be it. Yeah.
Wait, is it Korg?
I don't know. I just know in Planet Hulk, there was a rock character as well. And so as soon as I saw him, I was expecting, oh, this is the Planet Hulk thing. And that veneer of... The big rock thing from Planet Hulk was immediately busted the moment that you hear his voice.
Which was amazing. Oh, it was so funny.
It's like this, like...
All right, then.
Yeah, like this British guy.
So I'm looking... It's actually... It is Taika Waititi does the voice, the director.
Oh, wow.
Which is really... That's I don't know what the director sounds like, but... Gosh, yeah, he was one of my favorite characters in that whole movie.
Oh, hey, man. How's it going?
All right. Well, looks like he's dead, then.
Nope, I'm here because I was going to start a revolution, but it didn't work out, so I'm here doing this now.
Gosh, that's
just
so
like
great.
His whole, like, just so, like, matter of fact and just going along with everything. You just, like, he's one of those characters that's, like, funny, but you also immediately like him.
Yes, I just wanted him to be in every scene. He just works for me so well.
Yeah, and he was in quite a few. Yeah, so he meets that character, the rock character that is in the dungeon and kind of explaining to him what's going on and that he's going to have to fight. I don't remember the exact sequence of events, but basically, like, somehow Thor and Loki finagle their way into allowing Thor to fight the gamekeeper's
champion.
Main Champion, yeah, which stupidly the promotional materials we already know who that's
going to
be.
We need to talk about that because like the trailer shows that he fights Hulk, right?
Yes.
And in my head, I was like, oh, it sucks that they revealed that. But, you know, I just assumed that would be right at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
But we're about halfway through the movie, it feels like, at this point.
Yeah.
And as they're leading up to it, it's like they're playing it perfectly, I feel like. They're like, man, this guy is like a big deal.
You can tell that was their intent to not reveal it.
And like you can feel that if you didn't know already, you would be like, this is going to be a big person. And like in your head, you'd be churning through who could this be? Who could this be?
And it could have been kept under wraps because, people will notice that guy was cast in the movie. But that doesn't mean anything because they'll know, well, maybe he'll show up at some point. But it could have been the same as like Chris Evans.
Right. So it was Benedict Cumberbatch and.
Yeah. And Matt Damon.
Yeah. Somehow they kept Matt Damon under wraps.
Well, they did that with Chris Evans, too, in the second Thor. And people found out that all it was like Loki changing form to act like Captain America for about 3 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
Which was really funny. But it was like people know that that might have been
all that. And here's the thing, too. People might know, but I wouldn't know. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly.
If you want to avoid it, you don't have to read like rumors and stuff like that. But, like, putting it in your trailer means everybody knows.
Yeah, people wonder why we're not watching the Star Wars trailer. This is why. This is why right here.
Right. Because, like, that would have been
amazing.
Such an awesome moment. Because it felt awesome leading
down
up to
down to the line where he's like, he's a friend from work. Like, all of that was revealed in the trailer.
Right.
And it's just like, that would have been an amazing
joke. Yeah, it played so well in the
just
movie.
Not say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so he fights a champion, which he finds out is Hulk. And that was a really cool battle. And there was like this thing where like he's kind of picking up that he has stronger powers as a thunder god, which I mean he already was, but I mean like I guess he's like using it more with not relying solely on his hammer.
Yeah, kind of let that fight serve a narrative purpose.
Yeah. And so that happened, which again thought put into it. It wasn't just a random like let's have them fight. Like there was actually some development within the fight as well. And of course you find out that Gamekeeper has this rigged and Thor gets taken out by Hulk, but he's not dead because he's a god and they need the plot to go on. Yeah. So.
And then for some reason they decided to just throw him in the room with Hulk.
Yeah, he just wakes up and Hulk's in there taking a bath.
That was weird, right? They never explained that.
No, but it was hilarious
because
he just wakes up and he sees Hulk in like a hot tub and he's like, "We good?" And he's like, "Yeah."
When the Hulk started talking. And I realized that they're going to do this. That was awesome. I was like, they're really just going to have like full dialogue with
even
the
their
Hulk,
like
aren't they?
Friend fights were hilarious. Like, you know what we call you? We call you the stupid Avenger. No, no. Just like acting like a child.
Oh, so good. And then they, after he turns back into Bruce, and they just do the whole fight in the inverse.
Yeah, exactly.
That was really great.
Yeah, so basically he eventually gets the Hulk on his side to find a way to like bust out, and what do they do? They bust out from there and they get they hijack a plane that can get through what do they call it, like
the anus.
It was something funny.
The red anus, like, or the giant anus or something.
Yeah, the giant anus, which is like some sort of vortex that throws them back into normal
space.
And
we should say so during this Hulk turns back into Bruce.
Yeah, exactly.
And doesn't remember anything.
Right. The last thing he remembered was the end of Age of Ultron.
Right.
And so, so there's a lot of, like, buddy comedy stuff happening.
Which worked great.
Yeah, and they get Loki and the Valkyrie girl on board, and they, like, basically bust out. There's a moment where Loki sort of seems to be turning on Thor. Well, he turns on Thor.
Yeah, that's
Thor
before they get out.
Yeah, and Thor, it's while they're, like, breaking out, right? Yeah, and so they, Thor basically is able to stop him and tells him, like, he expects better out of him. And so they get a ship that they need from the Gamekeeper, and then they bust out through the butthole.
Yeah.
which, that one Loki scene was great, too. I forget what they call it, but he's like, come on, let's do, let's do I Need Help. And he's like, no, I don't want to do I Need Help. And then the door opens. Please help. Like acting like he's injured and then throws it at the guards. Throws Loki at the guards.
That's good.
Yeah. But anyway, so they break out and they head back to Asgard. And so I guess their plan is Thor is going to stall Hela while they try to... what was it? Their first plan was to get the...
They're just going to try and take down Hela.
Yeah. And somehow, there was a reason, but somehow that turned into they figured...
No. Their plan was to get the people out, right?
Yeah.
So Thor was just going to fight her and maybe beat her, maybe not. But like, the main thing was to try and get the people out.
Yeah. So Loki also shows up. Deciding to be a better person with a bigger ship to also assist in helping get the people out. Eomir, who's been working with Hela this whole time, like he also decides that he's a good person and decides to fight too.
Sacrifices himself to like...
Yeah, with machine guns.
Yeah. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. And so like they're like getting the people out and Hela is like stopping them. They're not able to stop her. And they somehow decide like the best thing to do then would be to just destroy Asgard by releasing Ragnarok, the helmet thing that he got at the beginning of the movie, which again was a perfect explanation for how they will defeat the villain. Other than
I was so happy with that because
it made sense.
Once it got to this part of the movie, like a lot of these types of movies, I started just checking out because the fighting was meaningless to me, and like it, I was like taking notes that were saying things like, see, this is what I'm talking about when I complain about when characters that are too powerful fight, because they both kept stabbing each other like through the heart and then they just pull it out and keep fighting. And it's like, none of this means anything to me.
Right. Yeah. There's no real way to defeat.
Yeah. It was like, they're just going to come up with some way to like, he's going to super lightning her. And then, you know, through the power of love, then she'll die. And I was getting annoyed.
Yeah, and that's what happened in like the second Thor movie, which was sort of frustrating. Like this, like super powerful dark elf, and they defeat him by let's drop the ship on him. Well, why did that defeat him? Because he seemed like godlike before. Why would drop? Because of course, you know, if they threw a ship at Thor, he would just bust through the middle of it and come. You know,
that's the
and
thing.
So there was. It's sort of like okay,
it's
I
like
guess.
The story needs to end, so now we will end it. And in this one,
it was a big enough
it felt
thing.
Like that's what it was leading to.
Yeah.
And then when he said that, he goes, oh, the people are Asgard, not the place. And like, you know, in my head, the gears started turning. And then, you know, he says whatever about beginning Ragnarok and destroying Asgard. And I was like, wow, that's how you do this, right? That's how you do like a Superman character.
Right.
You don't say they need to defeat the person by being more powerful or whatever, because that's just dumb. You come up with some clever way for them to sort of change the perspective of the problem. Like, I don't need to save Asgard. I need to save the people.
Right.
And I just thought that was extremely intellectually satisfying and like allowed me to enjoy the ending in a way that I feel like these types of movies I always leave frustrated.
And to be fair, like newer post like Suicide Squad movies of these superhero movies, both Marvel and DC seem to sort of get the memo, and they're actually trying to make an attempt to have
I'm not saying superhero movies, I'm saying movies where the superhero is like just extremely all powerful and can't die.
But Wonder Woman had that same power too. You have two gods fighting each other.
Although admittedly, I love that movie except for the ending boss fight where they're super punching each other.
Well, I didn't care about the boss fight. What I'm saying is that they built in a plot reason for why she would be able to defeat him. And it was because she was like imbued with like the god killer thing from Zeus. And so like I'm just saying like people
It still felt like it was like they were fighting and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, now I can super punch you, and then I went.
But it did make sense. All I'm saying is that it wasn't a big beam in the middle of a city.
Yeah, there was no beam in the city. This is true.
Right. Or just, you know, Zod and Superman punching each other, seeing who will eventually get a better move on the other.
Until one of them punches slightly snaps their neck and then they're dead.
Right. But even then, that was one of those situations where there's no clear winner, and you could reasonably make a case that even in that fictitious world, like, Zod should have won because he was a military leader, and
right.
Superman was just a person born on Earth that had no military training whatsoever.
Yeah, there was so, no, like, he outsmarted him, or he,
right,
you know, found
right.
some way to
just
get more
got
powerful.
Lucky to get him in a headlock yeah. and then break his right. neck. That's all.
Yes, because, so. Yeah, I'm not going to go into that, but.
No,
this movie was, did it yeah. good.
Right, exactly. And even Guardians did that as well. Like, they, like, if I remember correctly, like, it was almost turning into that with their, like, hey, let's shoot this big missile at Ronan. And then they were like, oh, well, that won't kill him. And so they had a reason as to why they were able to defeat him with that Infinity Stone. And they had a reason as to why Peter Quill could hold on to it.
In the
no,
second one.
It didn't
about.
Work. Oh, in the second one? What was the second
one? Yeah, the first one was great. I thought that was a great, like, you know, all of them together, and the fact
in the second one, they did blow it up, but they explained it that was the core of, like, where his brain was, like that was where the planet's center was, where it controlled everything, and so if they were able to get in there and blow that up, it was sort of a Death Star sort of
right.
scenario, except with a living Death Star.
But either way.
That was Kurt Russell. But
but yeah. I was very happy with the way that they dealt with it in this movie. I thought it was
yes.
it was, like, satisfying.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. From top to bottom, it was, like, very well thought out, even though, like you said, it was sort of a movie that didn't take itself too seriously, but just serious enough to where they actually thought through how things would get resolved in a satisfying way. They did the jokes and the plot behind it.
Okay, so I just realized my very first point, I was like, this is my first note that I was like, oh, make sure we talk about this. And I just realized I haven't mentioned it once. The music in this movie is the first time I have just loved the actual score of a Marvel movie.
Oh, yeah.
It was so good.
Was it,
like, have you listened to it at all?
Yeah, I remember there were some moments in it where I was like, oh, this music is really cool. I don't
so
it, I mean
it's like
and,
the
and of
sort
course
of
they Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, well, yeah, so the parts where they were playing, like, Led Zeppelin were the parts where I sort of rolled my eyes a little, and I was like, yeah, this is kind of doing the not quite as good as Guardians did it thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't really work for me super well whenever that came in, but the actual score itself was the A, it actually had strong themes, which none of these Marvel movies seem to have, and it's always been a thing that bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing was, it was this, like, the sort of standard Marvel Cinematic Universe, like, orchestral score, but, like, imbued right. with this 80s synth electronic music.
Yeah.
And it worked yeah. so well for me. Like, I just mm-hmm. absolutely loved it. I've been listening to it a whole bunch. It's really good coding music.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, because it'll like seamlessly blend between the 80s synthesizers and standard orchestral scores.
Yeah, I remember there was one spot where I even thought it sounded a little like Daft Punk. Like, it reminded me a lot of the Tron Legacy soundtrack.
Which honestly might be part of why I liked it so much, because... Yeah. I love Daft Punk, and I love that soundtrack specifically.
Yeah.
But unlike that, well, that had an orchestral, or an orchestra behind it too, but, like,
yeah,
it also had those strong MCU, like, Avengers themes
mm-hmm.
mixed with Thor specific themes.
Right.
And just the fact that there was melodies, like, it's something that modern movies frequently don't have, and it's a theme that, or it's a style that I liked whenever it started, when Hans Zimmer was doing all these cool wall of sound things.
Mm-hmm.
And I still like them, but it makes me sad that it's like every movie does that now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
superhero movies specifically are ones where it's like, these are bright, fun things. Like, give us themes and big soaring scores.
Well, one thing that's sort of exciting is, even if you're sort of, out.
Are you going to talk about Danny Elfman doing...
Yeah, Justice
yes,
League.
Yes, I'm very excited about that. Yeah, Justice League.
Yeah. If anything, it'll be a so-so movie with a great soundtrack.
Yeah, no kidding. I really like Danny Elfman.
Which, honestly, that's all they need for this. That's all they need to
That's a
do.
Very good point.
They need a win, and their definition of win is just get a 75% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Not rotten. Yeah. Over 60. That's all they need.
Yeah, 60% or higher, please.
Otherwise, Wonder Woman will be seen as a fluke, and
Yeah. Anyways, back to the score, though. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was great. So that was definitely a big plus, because, like, even Guardians, the soundtrack, you know, all the actual songs that they used were obviously really, really good. But the score for that one even was pretty bland. Like, you know, nothing bad, nothing that stands out. But that's part of the problem to me, is nothing stood out.
Yeah, he got lucky with Guardians in that he was able to repackage, I mean, in a great way, old songs as the soundtracks, because that's all people care about. So
yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily say lucky. I think that was... The thing he did was extraordinarily intentional. You know, the specific songs and that was an art of itself, the way he packaged those up and the way they fit into the movie itself.
True.
Which is also one of the things with this that, you know, felt off, was it just kind of randomly went into Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, that's true.
Or maybe it didn't, but it felt like it to me. It was like, oh, okay, we're doing this now.
Yeah, and it was the only, I think that was really the only real song they used, wasn't it? It was just that Led Zeppelin song.
No, they had a couple I liked. Twice. Let me see, I wrote one of them down. Where is it? I might be thinking, I think I'm thinking of Stranger Things.
That's all right. Yeah, because Stranger, that's a whole other conversation. We're going to do that next.
But yeah, well, and they used that same song. They used that same song twice, which is kind of like... The second time, it was kind of like, all right, like, and maybe it was supposed to be like sort of a theme, because isn't that song about something about Ragnarok?
Well, not specifically, but I think it does have to do with Norse mythology, which is why they use it. Like, it's like, I come from the land of ice and snow.
Yeah.
Like Led Zeppelin had lots of songs, like Ramble On is about the Hobbit.
But yeah, overall, the music was great.
Yeah, definitely. I might have to grab that, because I remember I added the... Blade Runner 2049 soundtrack, which was kind of a letdown except for a couple moments, and this one was like I wasn't really expecting anything from it, but it was very good.
Yeah, I've come to expect the same sound from basically all Marvel movies in terms of the score, and this one was very unique and fun.
Okay, so as we normally do with our movie episodes, what would you give this, what score would you give this? Like a Rotten Tomatoes style.
You know, it's interesting. I think I would have given you like a 75, maybe, before we started talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the more we've been talking about it, I feel like whatever the negative feelings I had towards it have kind of melted away and have been replaced reminiscing about the positives of it. And so I think I might be up in the like at an 80.
I will give it, that's what I was going to say, an 80%. It's great.
Yeah.
It's definitely, would you say, of the MCU connected universe that it's top five?
I don't know. I'd have to write them all down. It's hard for me to say that because of the ones that I liked the most, they're up a lot higher than this. But a big part of that is just... Thor himself is not as interesting of a character for me personally.
Yeah, I get that.
So, which is sort of grading it unfairly. And then I definitely, this one gets graded on a curve against Guardians in a way that the other ones don't, just because it's in the same style. And that hurts it in my mind, I think, a little bit too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that whole, it's not original thing.
Yeah. And like after I saw it, most of my friends hadn't seen it yet, and they would ask about it. And the line I pretty much have said every time is, it would have been a much better movie if it had come out before Guardians.
Yeah.
Which obviously is silly, right? Like, that's sort of unfair. But, like, you can't not think of Guardians while watching it.
Right. Yeah, which is what I was saying at the beginning, was, like, that sort of irked me that people were acting like this was this whole new... thing. Like, I think even the Rotten Tomatoes consensus says something about, like, sets the benchmark for, like, what Marvel movies should be going forward or something like that. And I was just like, I think that was Guardians, 4 years ago.
And honestly, it's like, I hope it doesn't, because I hope they continue to use different movies to try different things.
Yeah, which Black Panther looks like it's in that vein, which I'm so excited for.
Oh my gosh, that is definitely the Marvel movie I'm looking forward to most.
That's our next one, right? I think that's the next one.
It might be. When does the whole what is the Wars one called? The Infinity Wars. When does that whole thing start?
That's definitely after Black Panther. I don't know. It feels like that should be coming out this summer, but they've been like nothing.
Yeah.
Like not a peep.
Hmm.
But I feel like that's what's supposed to come out after Black Panther. I don't remember what the lineup is, but in the Netflix universe, I know it goes Punisher next week, and then it's like, I want to say Daredevil or Jessica Jones is supposed to be coming back after that. And then in the movie universe, I believe it's Black Panther, and then we should be getting Avengers. Maybe they like push that back to like a late release next year, and we'll see previews once Black Panther starts getting close. Because I want to say Black Panther is pretty early. It's like February or something like that. So it's not too long.
Yeah, Black Panther looks so good. It just looks unique, like Guardians, in the sense that it feels different.
And it hits the kingdom, the hidden kingdom feel that Inhumans should have hit as a TV show that was a bomb.
February 16th.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yep.
And I really like that Ryan Coogler, that director. You saw Creed finally, right?
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That was his last movie.
I could leave the running and everyone following him down the street at the end, but he has like a pre-fight montage.
Yeah, like and they do the motorcycles like around after him.
Yeah, that was sort of meh. But other than that, yeah, great movie.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. So I'm really excited about that one.
Yep.
So then next episode, we'll finally get to Stranger Things 2. Yeah?
Yes.
Gosh.
And I have some things. I did some reading today. I have some things to talk
about. You have some things.
I have some things to defend.
I tend to not read anything until after we do our episodes. So I kind of like that you do the opposite almost.
Yeah, okay. That's good.
It's kind of interesting, you know? A little different. Yeah. Like I didn't know, all I knew is that it had a good Rotten Tomatoes score for Thor. I had no idea what the general idea was. I assumed that everybody was making Guardians connections, but
There's some stuff I won't. Well, that stuff I kind of knew from being a nerd. And then there's other things like the reviews. Like those I read for movies like that. But then there's some movies where like I'm really looking forward to. Like I won't read anything about it. Like with Star Wars, I'm not going to. Like I might look at the score, but I'm not going to look at even any blurbs of reviews.
Right.
Because they normally aren't spoilery, but I don't even want to know impressions. I just want to completely. There is like a bit of like, I just want to see a good score before going in. For some reason, I have that in my mind.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Other than that, I don't want to know anything. But for some reason with Thor and like some of the Marvel movies, I don't really care.
Well,
like,
and I'm more meaning like before we record, after I see the movie, before we record an episode, I kind of like the idea that I keep my impressions untarnished from everybody else's. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but like I said, I'm glad you do, so I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm just, like, I haven't seen anything on Stranger Things, so I don't know what the general consensus is at all, other than everybody I've talked
it's
to.
Generally liked.
Yeah, I was about to say, all my friends who've watched it, I've definitely talked to them.
Right. Yeah, people are pretty happy with it. All right, so, yeah, so our next episode will be all Stranger Things all the time, and that'll get you through your Thanksgiving break. I believe we're going to continue.
We'll see when these actually come out.
Yeah, we're kind of recording in advance, hoping that we'll still keep our pace, but we might take a holiday break. We'll see.
Yeah, it's kind of up to my editing schedule and what ends up happening here.
Exactly.
Yeah, so if you guys want to tell us, tell us what you think about Thor. If you want to preemptively tell us what you think about Stranger Things too, feel free to do that as well. Although we're recording all of this stuff so much earlier than the
episodes
come out. That's
a great idea. Actually, if anybody has any theories or questions about stuff on Stranger Things 2, before we record an episode about Stranger Things 2, I want to make sure we get the 2 in there so people don't think we're talking about just it in general. Then leave us questions if you want us to talk about a thing or whatever, and we'll Other than that, we're just going to give our own theories and sort of talk about it and the season in its entirety.
Although we'll probably have recorded the episode before anybody hears what we're possible. Saying right now.
Yeah, it might be possible. So, but nonetheless, if you want to talk about any of that, you know, at A-Town FM, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
And the Reddit.
Reddit page and the website. Yeah.
Cool.